And I'm joined on the phone by Angela. You there with us?
Good morning.
Good morning. Hi. Where are you calling from today?
I'm calling from a very cold Oakland, California. So pulled out some sweaters and pants and socks I haven't worn in a while, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah. I think I know those words, sweaters, pants, socks. That's like obscure vocabulary.
Right.
Awesome. So Talk Story Radio, we sponsor or we partner with Story for All. And what is Story for All? What do you do?
Story for All, we are a nonprofit that helps to lift up voices in the community, especially those that may not be heard as often. We are all about cultural preservation and also making sure that helping to make sure that all voices are being heard and are at the table when it comes to creating policy. So, we're just really interested in helping people tell their stories, basically.
And
with a great partnership with KKCR.
I was just going to plug that one there, too, where it's the perfect partnership with a community radio station, because we're both all about lifting up local voices, amplifying those things, cultural preservation, like all of it. Like we're so in. So I'm glad that we're doing this. Thanks.
My pleasure. And it's exciting to be able to, you know, I learn a lot through each of these interviews. I learn a ton. And I'm really grateful to be getting to know our Kauai community better, particularly the people and organizations that are, you know, fervently and with great love doing what they can to help make this world a better place. Those are the kinds of people I really like to talk to. And that's what Talk Story Radio Kauai is all about.
Awesome. And I know that our listeners really enjoy these conversations, too. I get great feedback on it. So who are we talking to today? What are we doing?
Well, today is going to be fun. We've been doing a series about WIPA organization, and we will be going back to WIPA later in the summer. But this show is actually about another nonprofit organization based here on Kauai called Reef Guardians.
Reef Guardians. Okay. Just by the title of it, I kind of know what they do.
Yeah, exactly. So this recording that we have queued up to play, I actually went to a camp day that Reef Guardians hosted at Anini Beach Park. And so the recording, you'll hear various people talking, the founder, Robin Mazar, obviously giving a really great overview. Her board president was there that day, a couple of the volunteers, and of course the recipients of this great education, the kids who were there at the camp. So this recording hopefully will give you a little bit of the experience of what it's like to be at a Reef Guardians camp day, beach camp day. You get to hear some of what the kids are learning, and then from some of the folks who've helped to make this program what it is over a decade, and really interesting things that they're doing, not just in Kauai, but I won't give any more away. But yeah, just really wanting to shine the light on the important work that these folks are doing and the great heart with which they do it.
I love it. And it's a little bit of a different interview. If you're a frequent listener of Talk Story Radio and Story for All, it's a little different, and I think that you're really going to love it. So anything
you
more before we get
people
started?
Just as always, folks, let us know what you think. Do you like this? Is it a little too chaotic? Do you love it? Do you want to hear more like this? And as always, if there are individuals whose stories that you think should be told, if there's organizations who would like to have their story told on this show, please get in touch with us through kkcr.org or storyforall.org.
Yes. And you can always hear the archive of these stories if you hear voices that you recognize and you want to get all excited about it and share it with folks. You can go to kkcr.org. We've got an archive section, and you can find the Story for All archives, and it's right there, and it's great. And storyforall.org, if you want to learn more, head over there. Great organization. We're stoked. All right.
Thanks, Annie.
Yeah, let's get started. More chaos.
Thank you. come to reef camp.
So you couldn't just be in the ocean.
I had something to do.
Because I wanted to see different types of corals and learn about them.
Yeah. What have you learned about and what have you seen coral-wise?
I've seen rice coral, cauliflower, and
blue rice coral.
Yeah, brown rice coral.
Come on now.
There's a lot of corals that I haven't discovered, and I've discovered more.
Yeah. So chocolate.
Ice cream.
Okay, you guys were doing great, but I figured I'd just re-rein y'all in. Okay, so what does it mean to be Pono? We've already said a few words. What's the word?
Righteousness.
Righteousness, okay. Anybody else have a word that it, to them is what it means to be Pono? How about just doing what's right, right? That's pretty much what Pono kind of boils down to, doing what's right. So we have to think about these animals that we're about to experience. And even though Limu is not an animal, it is alive. And it should be respected, right? We need to make sure that we're taking care of these organisms as best we can. Do you think they're happy to be here with us at reef camp today?
Yeah, I think so.
No. You think they're stoked that we like, let's just borrow you from the ocean for a little while, right?
No.
Probably not. So that's extra reason.
By aliens.
Right? That's extra reason for us to be very, very careful with them. So during this experience, we are going to be touching things. However, we're only going to touch them in a respectful way, okay? Now, these creatures are ocean creatures. They don't breathe air like you and I. So if you pull them out of the ocean, out of the water, is that a good thing?
No.
No, right? So we're going to keep them in their bins. Keep them in the water so that they can keep on breathing, okay? Also, we don't want to be squeezing, okay? Squeezing leads to hurting. Okay, they are squishy critters, but they have stuff going on inside a lot of them. So we don't want to be squishing them. So I would like for everybody to choose their favorite hand, dominant hand, if it's your right hand, left hand, whatever. Put your index, your pointer finger up of that hand and repeat after me. I will not.
I will not.
Poke and prod.
Poke and prod.
Or otherwise injure.
Or otherwise injure.
Any of these creatures.
Any of these creatures.
Okay, you've all taken the poking pledge, okay? So we want to make sure that we are not being mean or being cruel to any of these creatures, and we're only treating them with complete respect, okay?
Okay, great. I'm here with Reef Guardians, and I understand you are one of the original mermaids.
One of the original mermaids, and I've been in working with the Reef Guardians, or playing with the Reef Guardians for 8 years. They've been 9 years, and I've been with them for 8 years. Robin kind of hooked me like a fish and brought me in. She found out how good I was in the water and said, come on, let's go.
Tell me your name.
Renee, or my mermaid name is Auntie Murnay. Auntie Murnay, like Renee Murnay. It's easy.
So what is it that compelled you, besides Robin's hook? What is it that got you involved with Reef Guardians?
I'm a mermaid. I love the ocean. I love kids. And it was an easy do, you know, just go come and join the crew. I've learned a lot, actually, since I started doing this.
Like what? What are some of the things you've learned?
The names of the fish, some of these little tiny microscopic things that I'd never look under a microscope. You know, I didn't have a class like that. So this evolution with having the microscopes and just having our DAR people and Aaron and Jess joining up, it's just enhanced the scientific aspect as well as the fun just being in the water snorkeling around, you know, so.
That's great. So tell me more about the evolution of Reef Guardians. You've been here since almost the beginning. So it's been 8 years since you've been part of this team. Mm-hmm. So how have things evolved?
Well, for one thing, we didn't used to have all the DAR people and the microscopes and the science. Like right now, I've been making the journals. Robin and Tom were making them in the beginning, and then they gave me that job. And so I make the journals now. And then since Jess has been on board, Aquamarine has been with us. She made these beautiful inserts, 12 pages, with all this information that now goes into the back of the journals. So the journals are twice the size that they were when I first started making them. So that's one thing. And we used to do more art, and now we do more science, which is fine. You know, we get some kids that will still do we'll still do art, but not it's not as big a focus anymore as it was before. And so, because we used to do like crafty art things, like with clean sea debris, you know, plastics, microplastics and things that they would, we would gather and clean it, and then they'd do make things out of that. We used to do stuff like that. We don't do that anymore, which is fine. You know, we had some people that used to come and help us do that. And then, yeah, so that's one thing. We don't do as much of the art. Although when they first get to camp, they get a fish card and they draw the fish and they do the three different names. They do the English name, the Hawaiian name, and the scientific name. And then if they want, they can color it in. We give them bags with colored pencils and they can color them in. And so,
I hear that the activities have changed. What about the focus? What is the focus for young people, or the sort of the mission of the organization, and has that evolved?
Well, since I started, it's been educational all along, but it's just gotten more expanded in that educational, like deeper into the science, deeper into like really diving much deeper into that than just the surface, right? And so for me, I know some things about the ocean before I started, but I've learned so much more. Like the different invertebrates now that I've learned about, and then the different kinds of corals, the names. So we just go deeper into all of that each time. And then now part of the Reef Guardians program has been doing these water testings at Anini Beach. And
so that's another, basically the end of the island.
That's another aspect that's been coming in to the Reef Guardians program.
So are students doing water testing?
Sometimes, yes, we do have. Didn't you guys do some water testing?
In the past, we've done a little bit of, like, using the instruments with Aaron.
Yeah.
But we didn't do, like, official recording things.
But it was just to get them in the idea of how to do it, the process of it.
To expose them to it.
Yeah.
What exposing them to what's doing the purpose of exposing young people to that kind of testing?
Well, then it makes it more comfortable for them to, you know, as they get older, then they get more responsible maybe about how to take care of the ocean, then diving deeper into what comes down from the streams and what goes into the ocean. And, you know, do we have a lot of pollution? Do we have a lot of silt from the rivers? What's causing, you know, the different things that are happening on our reefs? Why do they keep changing? Right. So that's something that the kids can start to get comfortable with, learning how to do these water testings. And, you know, so then they can find out, OK, so this is how it's changing over the years. Right.
What are some special memories that you have?
Boy.
8 years with Reef Guardians.
See, every time we go in the ocean, every time, it's just always a joy, because that's where I love to be, in the ocean, and to have the kids and to hear them get excited and, oh my gosh, look at that, Auntie. Look at that, Auntie. Oh, wow, that's awesome. That's what gets me. Yeah, really gets me in my heart. You know, when I show them, I take them out. We went way out today and we saw some coral that they might not be able, well, they can't see in close because it doesn't come in, it doesn't grow here. It's out in the deepers. And so we got a chance to go out with some of the kids and go out there into the deeps. And so we got to check off some of the corals that they wouldn't necessarily see if they didn't go out there with a guide that knows the way and knows how to judge when it's okay to go out there, you know, when the current's not running too strong or if the waves aren't too big, because we go almost to the edge of the reef. Yeah, I know. Well, we're at camp, so this is part of the dance at camp. it's like a cacophony sometimes, but it's fun.
Yeah.
My favorite though is when we get the kids in the water and they see things that, like today I was showing them some pencil urchin and they're like, wow, what's that? You know, and just different things. It's just like, it's so cool. And how many turtles? Oh my gosh, I saw a turtle hiding, or there was a big old grandma turtle, big, huge one. How many turtles did you see today? I saw 25. I saw 30. You know, it's just really, really cool. I love that.
Mm-hmm. some of the girls said they saw a school, I don't know if it's called a school, of swordfish today.
Oh, swordfish?
Yes.
Oh, the little needlefish, maybe?
Oh, that's...
That's probably what it was, the needlefish, because we don't have swordfish in close at Anini. But these are the things that we learn, right? We find out, okay, what is that fish? Is that really a swordfish, or is that, maybe that's just a needlefish?
I knew I had to verify that. I was like, really? You guys saw a bunch of swordfish? Mm-hmm. That's remarkable.
Well, they do have, it looks like they look like little swordfish, but they don't have those big dorsal fins that flare out. Yeah, it's their needlefish, probably what they saw was needlefish on the surface.
Right.
They hang out on the surface, and then we've got the cornet fish that hang out in the middle and to the bottom. And then there's the trumpet fish. Those are all long, skinny fish that, you know, so there's these different. But, okay, one thing that's really exciting is when we see SpongeBob. When we see SpongeBob fish, it's the frog fish. The little babies are, like, almost as yellow as that rash guard.
Like neon yellow.
They're bright yellow. And I don't know why. They're the babies. They should be, like, hiding. But then the adults are the ones that are camouflaged. You can hardly ever see them. But the babies are bright yellow. Yeah, look, she's got her frog fish on.
Oh, Jess has a frog SpongeBob headband.
She does. And the kids, of course, because they know SpongeBob, they're all like, they love seeing that guy. It's really, and it actually looks a little bit like a sponge, a square sponge. Similar. I mean, it's, you know, you can use your imagination. That's a really fun treat when we see the frogfish. Usually in the beginning of the summer, we'll see babies, and that's really fun. And then, oh, everybody, yeah, did you get to see the frogfish? Yeah. And then when we see the, we call them giddy-ups. That's our code word, because seahorses are really popular. Everybody wants to see a seahorse, and they actually hang out in the shallow, in the rubble. And then when we're out there, and if somebody says seahorse, then like all the people on the shore will come running over because they want to see it too. So we had to get a code word. And so we came up with the giddy up as our code word.
My kids saw seahorses when they came to Reef Guardian Camp, and they still talk about it.
Yeah, see, that's one of the highlights.
It really is. So what is it, guys? I know that the science is important. The time in the ocean is important. What's really going on for these young people? Yeah. Maybe on even a deeper level that is interesting to you about their time here.
Well, they get to meet new children. Like, we get kids that come from the mainland or other places that they, you know, so they get to meet other kids from other places and then develop community with that, you know, in that way. And for us, for me personally, I get more involved. I get to hang out with kids more, and so that keeps me connected to the community in a good way. It makes me feel good about myself. And the kids, most of the kids can handle their Auntie Myrnae. You know, they like me because I see things and I can take them out really far. So that it's encouraging to me. I feel fulfilled in doing, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of hard work behind the scenes. Miss Mermaid, Robin, is just constantly working to get things organized and get grants and, you know, just working on the paperwork and, you know, all of that. Luckily, I don't do that part. I do the schlepping. Like I'm a Sherpa. I like load and unload and load and unload, and I make the journals, and so then I get all the gear ready, like the fins and all that stuff ready. And when I'm writing their names on their snorkel bags before I meet them, I'm like, oh, I wonder what this kid's gonna look like, you know? And then when I meet them, and it's like, oh, okay, cool. This is cool, you know. I like that. That's fun.
And what about, you know, I'm just guessing from my kids' experience here and also my own experience in the ocean growing up. To me, there's the connection between confidence and learning, you know, having some facility and some relationship with the ocean.
Right.
Is that something that you have seen or...
Yes, absolutely. I have kids that their parents will come to me and say, I was so afraid to go in. Parents now were afraid to go in the water. And after this one particular lady, her daughter came to reef camp, then she took her mom out in the water. And then she got really, especially down here at Anini, it's mostly really doable for anybody, you know, any age. And I mean, we even take elders in the water down here because it's so accessible, and there's a lot to see, and so it's interesting, and that's been a very, very nice thing. It makes me feel really good when we have kids that the parents say, oh yeah, they taught me something, you know, and that's really, really good. And then it spreads, you know, and so there's more awareness. Because I think when adults try to tell other adults things to do, it's, there's kind of resistance, like, and so, but when a kid comes along and says, hey, mom, pack the trash. Hey, mom, you know, like, or hey, dad, or hey, you guys, you know, wear reef-safe sunscreen, or let's write letters to, you know, stop getting styrofoam here. That's what we were part of, the group that wrote letters and did advocacy towards, you know, getting rid of styrofoam and single-use plastic bags. And we're working on the sunscreen. I mean, they have a law. They still sell some of the sunscreen. We're working on that. We have them write letters. Maybe we'll do some more outreach and take the letters to, like, the managers of the stores so that they actually stop selling the sunscreen that's not...
Tell me, like, what the non-reef safe sunscreen?
Oh, it's got a lot of chemicals in it, and I'm not the expert on that. I mean, they have long names. But the good stuff that I use is the local brands that are made here on Kauai that are really good, and they're all organic, and they're reef safe. They're non-nano, I know. Yeah, non-nano, what is that? Zinc oxide. So it's, they're, yeah, it's not tiny, 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 so it gets into the reef and it can upset the coral growth, you know.
So I'm not a super expert on that. So we don't want the nano ones.
We don't want the ones that have all those long names. There's so many. Yeah, there's a bunch of them. You can look on our app. I think she has all the different things that are not safe on the sunscreen.
Great.
Yeah, we work with Surf Rider Foundation too, and so do beach cleanups. We encourage the kids to do beach cleanups with the Surf Rider Foundation. So try to work together with the crews, you know, interface, you know, it's good.
The big picture.
Mm-hmm.
What are you hoping this awareness will do for our young people and for our planet?
Well, the more the kids know about how precious this is, they might want to keep it forever. And for their children and for their children's children, for like seven generations, yeah, at least, and into the future. So, yeah, the more knowledge that we have, the more we know and understand about things, maybe the more we care for it. Yeah. We malama. Malama aina. And malama the kai, you know. Yeah. Is that good?
It's so good. Anything you want to add, Andy?
Just have fun. Stay safe. Have fun. Stay safe. Yeah. Love the ocean, and the ocean loves you. I mean, we are 70% water. We are, our bodies are 70% almost identical to ocean water. So what's not to love? Get in the ocean and let your mama float you, you know? We've learned more and enjoy it. And there's so much cool stuff out there to see and to just connect with. And it's part of our family. It's just another part of our family that we get to, you know, hang out with. Humans aren't the only ones. And that's good. The kids get to learn that they're not the only ones. Look, there's these little tiny things that are integral, and they work together. You know, they do symbiosis, and they, you know, they cooperate with each other and make things happen. You know, and you let one thing out of that system, and then the system starts to fall apart. So it's really good to know how integral it is. It's all connected. We're all connected. So the more we can get aware of that, then the better off we'll all be, the world and us, all of us. Yeah.
I totally agree.
Mm-hmm.
Auntie Murnay, thank you so much.
Don't forget, my mermaid name is Murnay. Auntie Murnay.
We'll see you out there.
Okay. Mahalo.
Oh my goodness, I love these.
They did not clean their teeth.
What is in there, you guys? See? What are you looking at?
So this section is sea cucumbers.
Can we touch
these
it?
These are sea stars, and these are funnels.
And we
that's
have,
the Hawaiian name of sea urchins.
And we have hermit crabs, too. They tickle your hands.
But you can pick them up.
Wait, can I
don't
one?
Think you're supposed to pick
them
up. But.
Oh, well.
Oh, well, but it doesn't matter anymore.
Oh,
I did
well,
it already.
I did it in my hand.
So what have you guys learned about these creatures today?
That they're very delicate, and you can't really touch them that hard, otherwise they'll get really mad.
It squirts.
These guys do.
It squirts.
Don't they clean the ocean?
They clean the ocean
yeah.
out.
Yeah, they're like the vacuum. Don't squeeze them, please.
All my paper's all wet.
Right.
Who squirted your paper?
No
this
one.
Guy?
This guy. So what do the sea cucumbers do?
They clean the ocean out. And they poop sand. They poop out sand.
They're like vacuum cleaners, wait, right?
Yeah, but except they poop
can
it
touch
out.
These ones?
Yeah,
you can touch them. I can.
Okay, tell me about Vana. We all know we don't want to step on them. What else do we know about Vana?
But it's okay. You can pick them up.
But you can't.
They eat at the bottom because at the bottom they have a mouth.
And their mouth looks their like a butt. Their mouth like literally drills and into they rock stop. To stay there.
They lick their rock to have a home.
Yeah.
And they're ectoderms, right?
What is this? Can you touch
what
this
does
one?
That mean? Oh, what's an ectoderm?
Softly put him on me. Softly.
I want him. I'm just picking him up.
What is it? Softly. Oh,
they're a kind of derm. There we go.
So we've learned a lot about that. Their mouth.
Can I see that? Yeah, look at his mouth.
Can I see him back?
You put them on the palm of your hand. They tickle you because their mouth is like...
Can I try to see his mouth?
Is the mouth trying to drill a hole in your hand? What does it feel like?
It feels like...
Can I try? It's like tickling my hand.
What do you think it's trying to do?
It's trying to think that we're rocks, so it's going to drill holes in our hands.
It's probably suctioning onto us.
It tickles.
I want to try.
All right, hand over the Vana to your friend so she can get tickled. How does that feel?
Yo, you can actually see the
spine. Yo!
Yo!
Did you hear that? You can see the spine.
Yeah, look, this one's moving.
It's moving!
It's moving!
What does that mean when the spines move? Do you know?
It's not really tickling me. Do these
have spines?
They're trying to move.
No. Yes, they do, but they're not pokey spines.
Why aren't they not poking?
They're sticky.
Okay, and then we have a brittle star in there. What can you tell me about a brittle star?
Brittle stars?
Where?
Right here, bro. Your
butt. Keep him in the water. Remember, we're not picking things out so they can't breathe. Uncle Aaron did that for a short time just to educate you guys, but we don't need to do anything.
Climbing out of there.
Don't climb out.
Yeah, you gotta give him back his lid sometimes. The brittle star is... They have light sensory organs on the whole top of their body. That's how they know which way is up. And then they like to hide, so they know where the light is and where the dark is. And as long as they get some darkness.
I hid you.
Yeah.
You happy now?
I can't.
You're listening to Kauai Community Radio. It's KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, KCQA Anahola. And this is our Story for All segment that we do on the fourth Friday of every month. And this is a pre-recorded interview that Angela Zussman from storyforall.org has done with Reef Guardians. She got to go to a Reef Guardians kids camp, and they are actively out there in the water learning about the organisms and the little animals that cruise around on our coral reefs. Thanks for tuning in today. We've got another half hour or so of this interview, and there's going to be some more people with that joy of discovery of the ocean. Please enjoy.
See you. If you can't see me, I can't see you.
Guys, there's a whole other bucket that nobody's paying attention to.
All right, what about some facts over here about the little crabs area? Tell us about the crabs.
The hermit crabs, once they grow out of their shell, they go and they find a bigger shell so that they don't have to get stuck into their shell.
You know what? Last year they actually brought like a whole scorpion shell here, but it was like super empty and it was like cool.
You came to Reef Guardian Camp before and they had a bigger crab.
Oh, they had a bigger crab.
These two are tiny.
They are.
They're cute, eat those. There's big ones. Did they try pinching you? Yeah, he pinched me.
What else do you know about hermit crabs?
I've seen hermit crabs live in trash, unfortunately. Let's leave him in his bucket, okay? Yeah, remember, he's kind of the same thing. We don't want to be just lifting them out. But I have seen them live in trash, which
this
is sad.
Bigger.
I've seen them live in, like, Coke cans and weird things underwater. They're really cool. They can one species does seem to often have a preference of the shell they live in, the snail that created the shell that they live in, so that same look, and you can kind of see that a lot of the there's like duplicates of the same crab in the same shell basically, but they don't have to be stuck to that. They can kind of live in whatever they can figure out how to fit their little body into.
These guys, their suction cups are like to stick on the rocks,
yeah,
right?
They're called tube feet.
Tube feet, yeah.
That's sea cucumbers, right?
The little guy tickles.
Yeah.
And on the bottom of the hermit crab, there's these like pink little things that are attached to their little legs.
Yeah, well, they're back set of legs. So, you know, if we look at this crab, you see this little guy here? How many sets of legs do you see?
Two. One, two, three, four.
Right, there's four sets of legs and then there's claws.
There's
eight. And there's also little mouth parts that are kind of like little claws. But for a hermit crab, their backmost set of legs will be what holds them into their shell.
My name's Aaron Swink. I'm just a volunteer here with Reef Guardians. Yeah.
You seem to be a very knowledgeable volunteer. What's your background?
Well, I'm an aquatic biologist, and I've worked a few different roles. Most recently, I did work for the state. I was the education and outreach specialist for a division of aquatic resources, and I just this last year left that job to go, and I'm teaching at Island School now. My wife teaches there, and so it's kind of for our family, you know, it's a good, and I love the school there. It's a great spot. So I'm teaching there, but yeah.
Awesome. So what do you do as a volunteer with Reef Guardians, and why did you choose Reef Guardians?
Well, I've just known Robin for a long time, and I worked with this program a lot when I was with the state, with DAR as well, helped kind of, you know, develop some of the little, you know, like this probe with the invertebrates that we did there. That's kind of, you know, as you can see, it's not the first time I've done that spiel. And then I just love, Robin's a wonderful person. So I just love, you know, this is such a great program. It's something I believe in, getting kids to be able to experience it. I mean, as a teacher, even, it's like a lot of my students have gone through this program in years past. I see what a value it is, like how a lot of those students, like, I'm like, hey, you remember this from Reef Guardians years ago. I know you were there. What was that? And they remember, you know, and I'm like, you were there in like fifth grade, and they still remember things from that, you know? So it's like these very, like, can be like these programs can be very influential, I believe, in a young person's life. And, there's a lot of people that are born and raised here that, you know, it's like they want to give their kids like the that opportunity to like learn deeper and, you know, learn more about like the scientific side of things. And then there's a lot of people, families that are brand new to the island, and they don't know anything about the ocean or the reefs here, or, you know, the traditions or things like that. So this is a really good place for those kind of two groups to kind of come together. Everybody learns something and come away with, having learned and gained something. So I think that's one of the strengths of this program, is that you see kids from different backgrounds.
And what's the value? People might be like, yeah, well, so you know the name of a fish. What's the big deal? What is the big deal? Why do you think it's important for any of us, and particularly young people, to know, to, you know, have the experience and some sense of knowledge of what's happening in their ocean?
Man, how long you got? Okay, here's my fast answer off the cuff, is that, you know, take a deep breath. You know, 70% of that oxygen you just breathed came from the ocean, right? Like, that's where most of the photosynthesis happens, is plankton in the ocean, right? It's the foundation of all life on Earth, that, you know, without that, literally, we would not have life. And so, at the very least, we have to protect these ecosystems, you know, and they're all very interconnected, you know. From, we know here in Hawaii, we got this beautiful little, you know, island with each ahupua'a feeding into the ocean, and we can see very clearly the connection. We can see the mountain, the center of the island, and see the end, you know, the beginning and the end of the river, right? But on the mainland, it's a lot different. You know, it's harder to grasp those scales. So we're very blessed here that it's easier to teach and show, like, the connections between, like, the land and the sea, what happens on the land affects the sea, than it is for maybe somebody in Minnesota to understand it affects the Gulf of Mexico, right? Like, it's a much smaller scale. So I think that's a cool opportunity that we have here for kids to understand the connectedness. And then I think there's a really great value in the traditional wisdom of the people of Hawaii that have assembled this body of knowledge and wisdom over centuries. and for those things to be preserved and passed down to the next generation, as well as incorporating like what we're learning today, the most current information, and like it, how, you know, those kind of things can be put together. And it also gives kids a way of like, they're not likely to go into a career in marine biology or science if they've never seen somebody who was doing that as a job, right? Whether, even if it's on TV or something, that's good, but it's even better if they're seeing it in person. So this is an opportunity for like people like Jess, and, you know, to come and like see, I have a job doing this. You know, this is what I get to do. I get to go scuba diving for a living. It's amazing, you know? and so that's the, to me, is like, I guess there's a lot of things that could be said about why it's important. But, and then I think too, it's just like, you know, at the end of the day, they're going to be an influence on their friends and their communities and even their parents. So it's like, I mean, look at how that education about sunscreen has really changed public perception on that, you know? And I believe it's making a difference. Like, I think that some of the positive things that we see going on our reefs, we can't say for sure, but I think that there's a lot of places where we see actually like corals, and anini is one of these places where it's like, it seems like they're doing better every year in a lot of ways. And at least in, you know, kind of overall in certain areas and stuff. So is that because of maybe this change in the sunscreens? Because that stuff was really toxic, you know? So it's like that those kind of education can campaigns and things like that can really make a difference, you know?
Tell me some of the things that you personally have learned from indigenous knowledge, you know, Hawaiian culture, that has been really interesting to you as you kind of mesh it with science.
Oh, man, how long do you got?
Again, give me your top three. I don't know.
Gosh, I don't know. I think it's so I'm not from Hawaii. I've lived here most of my adult life. My family moved here about 20 years ago. I came with them and stayed. I kind of went back and forth for school and stuff like that, you know. But I guess, I mean, there's a ton of just like knowledge that's just like from base of observation about connections between moon phase and certain fish activity and the names for things and, you know, just the kind of the conceptual way of looking at the living world, you know, as like Makutu Makai, like these, you know, very basic concepts. But I think like a lot of it just has to do with the attitude, and it's just like there's a respect, and it's an intangible almost, I feel like, that, you know, I feel like I have been able to be very privileged to been shared that with me from, you know, people that are from here and have kind of welcomed me into different circles of friends and things, and I've gotten to work alongside, and as I just listened and observed how they've, you know, approach things, I've tried to let those ways of thinking kind of, you know, affect my own, right? And
can you give me an example?
Yeah, it's just like it's like slowing down. It's observing. A lot of it is just like about like not moving so fast. It's just like slowing down, looking at things over many generations, and letting, you know, understanding the connections between like something like moon phase and fish activity, and it really is, you know, it really is true. Like there's amazing like connections. And I think even just the names of animals and the names of places have a lot of meaning to the history of the place, but also like the kind of underlying, there's like a principle in it too, like a story or a message or a lesson. It's like layers, you know?
Yeah.
So it's hard for me to just say like, here's an exact example. I guess it's just kind of like a way of thinking and a way of, so like a lot of that has to do with fishing traditions, right? For my personal, I'll just say personal things, is like fishing traditions. Like, hey, like, you know, how do you approach fishing for this certain fish? You know, what is the right way to do that? And how do we perpetuate those things? Because obviously not everyone is using like the gear that was only available in old Hawaii, right? Like That's not what it means. It's about bringing that Hawaiian mindset to modern practices, you know, about not taking more than you need, about feeding your family. And really it's about you care for the place first. You know, it's like you feed your fish at your koa, right? Like you have a koa, a fishing ground. You take care of the fish there, and that's your zone, you know, and you take care of that place, you malama that place, and then that will feed your family, right? So you take care of the place and it will take care of you, right? And not just like, how can we extract the most? You know, so that's something that I think that's the kind of things that I try to impart, like when I'm doing these fishing lessons and stuff like that. And so,
I saw you out with the kids with fishing poles, and I heard you talking about some of these practices, like how many fish do you need? So, yeah, what was the sort of the gist or the punchline of that activity?
Well, this is just teaching them about the regulations that we have. A lot of kids, like, they fish, but they have no idea about that there are even any fishing regulations or what they are. You know, like, and I see kids sometimes, you know, I'm happy that they're fishing, but they're like taking really small undersized fish, or they're using like small eye throw nets, which are not legal, you know, stuff like that. And it's just an education thing of like teaching them about, because kids, it's like, you want to, I mean, I remember being a kid, I grew up fishing like every day. I was obsessed with fishing. I fished my whole life. And it was like, when you're a kid, it's like, I want to get as much as I can. I want to get as big as I can. And it's like, if you're not taught like how that affects things and how that plays out, then that kind of ends up being your mindset, you know, if you don't, and that's harmful in the long run. So it's kind of like, hey guys, like, there's some regulations, getting them to kind of slow down a little bit. Why do we have regulations? What are the regulations? Can you even identify your fish? You know, like, you know, the different species of goatfish and hoo-hoos and everything, right? So that, I would say that just, that this is just about getting kids to understand that there are regulations and know some of the basics of it, and then just have fun, you know, casting and practicing their casting and stuff like that. So
how has your time with Reef Guardians impacted you personally?
Well, you know, it's I think one of the best things is just like, I've spent more time here at Anini. It's like, I've gotten to just like really know this reef really well through this program, because it's like, I probably wouldn't have come out here and snorkeled the same little route that we take the kids on. We have these landmarks kind of that we go between. So it's like, we have these routes to like these, you know, really between like cool spots, and we kind of take the kids to these different things. So it's like, by doing that now for many years, it's like, oh, like, I see, oh, this spot is like way nicer than it used to be. Or like, oh, like, this spot is like, oh, there's some kind of, what happened here? Like, you know, it's like some kind of coral disease going on or something in this zone, right? There's a lot of algae here. You know, it's just you kind of know, you start, so that's been really fun for me, just kind of having that regular route out here, just kind of going to the same spots, observing the changes. It's very dynamic.
It's almost like a corner spot in the neighborhood, right? Yeah, it's like your little zone.
Yeah, Anini is very, very dynamic. It's different every time you come out here. There's a massive amount of change from the seasons and even year to year.
Any memories rise to the top when you think about your years with Reef Guardians? Any stories you would want to share? Or aha moments for you,
Let's see.
One of the kids?
I remember, like, I think it was the first year or first or second year where I was working with the kids here. We saw a white-tip reef shark out in the channel, and that was, I mean, the kids were stoked out of their mind. I mean, it was awesome. We, like, dove down, and it was, like, under a ledge. It was just, like, sleeping under there. Every time I go out, I'd check. And I've seen one before at night here, but that was the only time I've seen one during the day with the camp. And I always check that spot, see if it's there again. And it never has been. But that one time, there was a shark under there. And that was really fun for the
kids.
What
did the kids do?
Oh, they were just like, you know.
They were like,
yeah, like, yeah, I was like, yeah. And then it was like, okay, guys, like, it's fine. Like, then they were having a hard time getting down that deep, because it's kind of deep water, some of them. But the ones that were able to, was kind of like, you know, like, you just go take a peek. And it's pretty cool for them, you know. So, yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. And anything that you want to share that you've kind of learned from the ocean over the years?
Oh, man. Well, respect the ocean. It is way more powerful than you, you know? It's like, you can get your... Yeah, you can get rocked pretty quick if you're not careful. I mean, I've had a couple near-death experiences. So, yeah, respect. Take care of the ocean, and it will take care of you.
Yeah. Very good. Anything that you want to add? Anything else you want people to know about Reef Guardians?
You should donate money to it. If you have money to donate, you should donate money, because it costs money to run this program, and the kids that come are almost all on scholarship. Robin charges to like pay what you can. So, and you know, a lot of people volunteer, but you know, some people are full-time employees putting on these programs. She's putting together like a hui that's trying to study the water quality here at Indian. So there's a lot of great opportunities. If you got some extra money to throw at this program, you should definitely do that.
It will be well spent.
Yeah, it will be well spent. We're trying to get right now they're trying to get either a truck or a trailer to haul gear and leave it, you know, have it be more. You can see the cleanup operation going here. It's like four different cars piled up high.
It's as long as the camp day the setup and the breakdown.
Yeah.
Thanks to this great team of volunteers.
Yes, that's what it takes.
Oh, well, thank you so much.
Yeah.
All my best to you.
Thank you. Appreciate the opportunity.
Did you have a question?
What was your name again?
I'm Angela.
Angela. Okay. That's right. All right.
Aaron.
Yes.
Thank you so much. Best wishes.
Okay. So this, oh, here's some little tiny snails here. So you guys can take turns on the different microscopes. You can put what you want. You're going to have whatever you want to look at needs to be right dead center over the middle of that light. Okay? And then ask for help, and I'll help you adjust things if you need it. But you can take turns looking at these different things. Okay?
All right. So, what's under that microscope? What do you see?
I see some of them. They look like shrimps, but they're not. I see plankton.
What does it look like if you just look with your eyes, not with the microscope?
Like specks of glitter.
It just looks like specks of little stuff moving.
But the microscope makes it look like what?
The microscope makes it actually bigger so you can see what's going on.
Pretty cool, huh?
Looks like there's slugs on salt and noodles.
Slugs. Are you hungry? All right, I'm speaking now with Tom Woods. Tom, tell me your story of how you became involved with Reef Guardians, and what's your role here now?
Yeah, I'm the president of Reef Guardians, and how I got enrolled was back a number of years ago, I don't know, nine or ten years ago now, a group of us, Robin especially, Terry Lilly, myself, Harry Rabin, we all got together because we all love the ocean, and we figured, you know, we got to do something about, you know, protecting this reef. Because we can go back to like 2016, somewhere like that, there wasn't much coral out here at that time. And so we began to work on it, and we knew that what was really important was to begin with was educating children. They're the future. So you can figure now that it's 9 or 10 years since we started, some of those 13-year-olds are now 23 years old. You know, they're voters. You know, they can take action, things of that nature. So we focused on that, and now, you know, we're into 9 or 10 years of, I think it's 9 years of Reef Camp now. You know, we expanded it out. Robin may have talked about how we created the online sea school, how we kept everything rolling during COVID. And during COVID, we put a lot of people to work. Which was really great. A lot of creative work was done, and we're just beginning to roll some of that out right now. So that's pretty much how it started. And then because all of us are involved in environmental work of some kind, Harry Rabin in California with our shark program, the oil well program, the leakage program, staying on top of the science, working with more scientists here. You know, we've been able to grow that way and, becoming real leaders now and taking responsibility for the environment.
Talk to me about some of those other programs. I haven't heard much about them.
Yeah, in California, we have a program where the coastline in, let's say, Ventura County, north to Santa Barbara County, used to be hundreds and hundreds of oil wells in like the 1800s, early 1900s. And when they got all the oil they wanted, they just, you know, closed them up and walked away. Now they're leaking, and they have been leaking for some time. So we've been working on programs on how to find, using technology of how to find those leaky wells, and then how to plug them with the right materials you know, to try and stop the leakage. Then the shark program. Santa Barbara is a birthing area for great white sharks. And there have been fishermen getting involved, motorboats, all kinds of things have been interrupting their progress up there. And so we put together an educational program in Santa Barbara to educate the public about, hey, don't mess with, you know, the baby great whites. You know, they're cute, but let them be. You know, they're here to eat some stingrays off the bottom and grow up and go off and do their thing. And they're very important in the whole, you know, the whole chain of life, for marine life. So that's what we primarily have going over there. And then other things too, where Harry's working on, you know, ships that get pushed up onto the beach and how to clean up the beach to get boats that have gotten destroyed in big surf and stuff like that. So that's what we've got going in California. Yeah.
Wow. So your umbrella really reaches across the sea. It's not just about here in Kauai.
No, it's not about Kauai. And we've also done program like over on Maui. I don't know if Robin talked about that at all. Okay, so over on Maui, there was a wetlands restoration program that we were the lead nonprofit organization working with local people to bring back native plants to the wetlands area. And it was a very important project, and it's still going to this day. So we've been active over on Maui.
And for the listeners who don't maybe see the connection, mm-hmm. they might be like, why is a reef organization, why do they care about plants that are on land? So talk to us about the watershed.
Yeah, so you have to understand what goes on the Aina affects the Kai. So when you're looking at wetlands or you're looking at the ocean, you also have to be aware of what's happening on the land. And so on Maui County, where they had wetlands that were being built on, they were forcing streams and things of that nature into areas where the flow wasn't proper when the big storms came. Like they just had a big storm a couple of months ago that took out a massive area of road, and it might even still be closed to this day. So it's really important. And here, like, we have our stream testing program because this lagoon here at Anini is so important. We need to test everything that's coming down these streams here. And we're being very successful at that now. We've been over a year of accumulating data. The whole program is being stepped up into a higher category of testing to be EPA, health department standards. We've got water specialists from Maui County, from Oahu County, working with us to get this program underway. And it's such a success that as others and various Ahupuahas are learning about us, they're saying, hey, we want you to do what you're doing, you know, at Anini Lagoon over where we are, like Moloa, we started over there. Now Anahola wants us to come over there, you know. So eventually we'd like to see where we can take the educational program we develop here and all the science and the tools and things and let it spread out around the entire island, where citizen scientists working with scientists, we can accomplish the goal of knowing the relationship between the Aina and the Kai and how they affect each other.
From the land to the sea.
From the land to the sea.
Kai.
Yeah. So you can see what, you know, where we're at and how it's evolving now. And like here at Anini, we have now a number of the residents that live here in Anini that are getting involved. They're involved in the water testing programs or loaning us a truck or doing our testing program underneath their house, you know, that's built on steps to have, you know, to have a lab, you know, things of that nature. So it's definitely grassroots. It doesn't get any more grassroots than this, you know, and it's expanding. A lot of people learning more about us. You know, we're working, you know, like with other organizations, you know, besides working with Department of Land and Natural Resources. You know, we have other nonprofit organizations like North Shore Gives has been very supportive. Many of the other organizations, Lions clubs like that, are all beginning to get more supportive because everybody realizes if we don't do it, who will? right. Because the DLNR, you know, like even now with as a federal agency, you wonder what's going to happen to them. And they're already understaffed and underpaid. Before anything happened with the budget, they were already understaffed and underpaid. So we, the citizenry, now have to take on that responsibility because we can't, you know, lay it off to the feds or the state. I should say the state, if they don't have the resources to do it. So we can't stop. We're just going to have to do it. And we know the money's out there. We know the science is out there. What's needed is the leadership. You know, so as we play a role model, then others begin to see, hey, I can do that. You know, and those are the magic words. You know, I can do that. You know, great, then do it. You know, we'll show you how to do it. So it's really great because we can see how the citizen scientists are now stepping forward to play a role in, you know, preserving and protecting our environment. And it just makes, you just have to make the decision that I want to do it. I'm going to protect what I love, and I'll learn what I have to learn. I'll learn to network with who I need to network with. And step by step, it happens. It doesn't happen overnight, but, you know, one day comes around and people say, well, you're an overnight success. Yeah, it only took 10 years, you know, but.
And then the 40 before that, that yeah. I learned how to do what I did for 10 years.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and all that. Yeah, so, you know, so that's pretty much, you know, what we've got going on now. And we've got a great team of people. It just keeps getting better every year, more people stepping forward. It'd be nice to get some younger people involved too. You know, right now, the makeup of our team is mostly people over 60, you know, and so we come down and do all the hard labor, setting up, tearing down every time we've got cam, going out and doing sampling, things of that nature, and it'd be great to get more younger people involved in it. And I know it's really hard for them nowadays with the cost of living the way it is. They may not have the free time, you know, to do what's needed the way we have to do it. But that's what we're hoping for now, is now we need to build the next generation that's going to, you know, take leadership and responsibility, because you have to pass it down, yeah, pass it forward.
Yeah, I hear you. I mean, I really feel that sense of responsibility or Kuleana coming you. And how have you been impacted personally by your work with Reef Guardians?
Well, I think that you begin to see the amazing, beginning, like here we are at a reef camp, the amazing kids that we see. They're, even though many of them are like 8 years old, they're really wise and really caring, phenomenal swimmers, love the ocean, have a deep desire to want to learn science, you know, because that's how we approach them all as young citizen scientists. And just to see that yearning to want to learn. And we're not forcing them to. They don't have to go to reef camp. They're here because they want to learn. And that is just so rewarding to see them having fun learning. Yeah. So that's rewarding in itself. Then seeing the community coming together, you know, to join in. You know, we know we need to do the water sampling program. It's a big program. And you have to be committed. So we're getting people who are more and more committed, you know, as time goes on here. So that's pretty rewarding too. Yeah.
Aw. You have a beautiful sparkle in your eyes right now. I wish everyone could see it. It seems like it means a lot to you. I feel like your heart is speaking through your eyes right now.
Yeah, it is. You know, it's sort of like when you get to this point in life, you know, you begin to realize that we get to choose what character we want to play in the game of life. So I'm glad to be in that position along with the rest of the team here to be one of those characters that are part of the team of Reef Guardians that might make a difference, you know, in the world in the future. And so like if you do a good job, it ends up in living a life of significance. What could I do to make a difference? You know, so I think that if everybody begins to look at that of like, what am I doing? How can I help make a difference? You know, then your life will begin to change, because then it becomes, you can begin to see how much power we all have to make a difference. And that's one of the things that gives me great enjoyment is to see the team members that are coming together now that really want to make a difference. And I'm sure that's why you have your show. You want to make a difference. And this is how you can do it. Yeah?
We all have our funny little talents, right?
Yeah.
It's just a way of figuring out, like, how can I do what I love in a way that helps make this world a better place?
Now, absolutely.
Yeah.
That's what it comes down to.
We all have, there's definitely a need. We can all contribute, and it just feels good.
It feels good, and you want to do it now. You know, you don't want to be laying on your deathbed going, my God, I wasted an entire life, or...
I was going to, right?
That's it. But I didn't, and now it's too late. You know? Darn.
It's not too late. It's not too late.
It's never too late.
Yeah, good. Thank you. Anything else you want to say? Anything else you want people to know?
Aloha to everybody.
Aloha. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Good luck.
Okay, thank you.
So what did you ladies see in the water today?
We saw a lot of fish. We saw swordfish.
We saw plankton.
We saw two turtles.
We saw a lot of corals.
And we saw humanuku.
Stainfish.
You saw a swordfish?
Yeah.
We saw swordfish.
There were like a whole pack of swordfish.
Wow, how cool is that?
I saw some clarinet fish.
What kind?
Clarinet fish.
Have you seen those things before, or was today the first time?
No, we've seen them up in Boise a little bit.
How do you feel when you're in the water seeing these beautiful creatures?
It's magic, magic.
Magic. Super magic.
Yeah. Majestical.
Thanks for listening to our pre-recorded broadcast. That was Angela Zussman attending the Coral Reef Kids Camp, where the kids learn science and learn about the coral reefs and how they can be the best stewards of the ocean that they can be. I thought it was adorable. Thank you. You can find the archive of this show at kkcr.org, and we'll have the archive up very shortly, possibly even today. And you can find more about Story for All at storyforall.org. And you can, if you have an organization or a very interesting person that you think needs to have their story told, you can contact me at gm@kkcr.org. I'll get you in contact with Angela, and let's see what great radio we can make together. Thanks for listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, KCQA Anahola, K205 FM Honolulu. We are happy to have you with us here at KKCR. We're Kauai's community radio station, and we are all about getting all of the voices that we can in our Kauai community on the air, amplifying them, getting our voices, opinions, stories, music out there. Speaking of music, we've got a great lineup of music today. We've got Dee's Diner coming in at noon. The Mardi Gras Soul Review with Swamp Daddy coming in at 2. He'll be broadcasting from the Sunset Studios over in Kekaha. 4 o'clock is Stevie D with Solid Action, just a mad chaos of crates full of records over and over. And Avant Garden at 6 o'clock with Lindsay Boogie. She puts on a great show. Dagan with Late to the Party at 8 o'clock. And Sterling's Choice at 10. You never know what you're going to get. So thanks for keeping it locked right here on Kauai Community Radio. I'm Radio Annie, and I will be with you if you want to give us a call here at 826-7774. I'm going to be with us most of the day, too. So thanks for tuning in today.